closer.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your host for today. My friends call me Todd, but you can call me the guy coming through the headphones connected to your phone on a plane flying someplace. You can call me that guy. Or you can call me the guy in the car with you who's not really in the car with you. So you have to listen to me and suffer all the bruises that I will give you emotionally and intellectually, and yet you cannot use the carpool lane. That's me. I'd be that guy. Hey, welcome. I'm glad you're here. It's another exciting podcast, and it's always fun. I can't even tell you how excited I am about how everything's going. You know, June's coming up. We've got the big June extravaganza. Decker and I are going to travel North America. HPRCT is coming up. If you're going to that, maybe I'll see you guys there. If not, I'll look for you. I saw Mark Yeston, accidentally bumped into him in the Chicago airport. You always kind of hope that happens. Like once I almost saw Corey Pitzer. He actually did see me, but I didn't see him. But Mark Yeston and I, if you know the Chicago airport well, there's Terminal B for United, and then there's that weird tunnel with the lights and the sound that goes over to Terminal C. And if you turn there, there's a Starbucks on one side and like a sunglass hut on the other side. And if you're walking from security towards that tunnel, you cut through the sunglass hut and you cut like, I'm serious, it's a huge efficiency. I'll bet you save 3 steps, maybe 4 steps. So I cut through the sunglass hut because, you know, I'm a terribly efficient, important guy. And as I cut through the sunglass hut, Mark Yeston was cutting through the sunglass hut the other direction, and we bumped into each other, and it was super fun. Sadly, we didn't have time to do anything very exciting, but we walked together for a while, laughed, took a selfie. The selfie was very, enjoying the selfie, and pretty much took off from there, but it was sure fun to see him, as it is always fun. Lots going on in my world, and I'll bet in yours as well. It seems like I'm spending a bunch of time talking to people. We're looking at really the way we look at catastrophic failure. So serious events, fatalities, that's all really changing up, and that's becoming, I think, an opportunity for us where some new ideas are coming into the system, and that's important. And then there's lots of re-emphasis around some of the fundamental empirical principles that we carry into our work, the research-based, science-based activities that make us better. And then there's lots of great people out there just doing really great work. And that's kind of what today's podcast is all about. If you don't know today's guest, you're about to. His name's Ray Gonzalez, and he works with Hope Consulting, H-O-P-E, Human and Organizational Performance Excellence. And he's a long-term human performance practitioner out of the nuke power industry who's rolled over and is now working in other industries, most specifically, or maybe I should say it this way, most excitingly, the industry that he's really passionate about is medical. So Ray and I got together and did a little podcast, and that's what I'm going to share with you today. I think you'll like it. I'm curious to see your feedback, because one of the great things about this world, the world in which we inhabit, is that there are many different views and many different people. And I actually think that makes it more interesting, not less interesting. And I've really been working hard this year to be accepting and understand that different views exist. They coexist simultaneously. And I think you're going to find Ray's podcast to be really, really fun. He's super entertaining, probably the best coach, on-the-floor coach that exists in the world is probably Ray. He's that good. But listen carefully to his podcast, because he's going to talk to you about some of the old human performance values and some new human performance ideas that he's carrying in and what that means. So let me not talk much longer, because I can blab on for a long time. But it's probably better that we actually listen to and enjoy this little conversation. So I'll talk to you on the other side, but enjoy, my friends. Have a great time. This is Ray Gonzalez.
Absolutely.
you know, in the past year or so, working with one large utility company, rolling out a complete human performance program for them and all the processes that are associated with it. Had a lot of success. It was on the non-nuclear side of the electrical utility business, which is great. My background is commercial nuclear, but the efforts there were phenomenal. We were able to customize training and you know, all the associated mentoring and consulting around other initiatives that they had in place. For example, lean and initiatives for improvement in the industrial safety area. So, yeah, it worked out really well. We're still kind of working with them. It's actually grown. We started with one business unit in a particular state, and then we have been working to go out to other business units throughout their generation system. So,
what are you guys learning? What are you finding? Like, for instance, how does kind of the new view crosswalk with lean?
Well, you know, there's a lot of similarities in terms of what lean is trying to accomplish. Lean is trying to look for not only waste, but also looking for those organizational weaknesses that exist. So anytime you're trying to have any kind of culture change for continuous improvement, you're looking for those organizational weaknesses that are driving human behavior to cause error. So just like human performance efforts, we always look for those organizational weaknesses when we go out and do observations and other things as we go. So there's a lot of similarities there.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, this is a pretty good place to sort of introduce that. What's your background? What brought you into this world? All that good stuff.
Yeah, this is my 37th year in the electric utility business, and my background is commercial nuclear. So that's where I started and got into it as in the operations department, a plant operator, worked my way up into the control room, got licensed and certified, and then went off and did some training and quality assurance, worked in work control or work management for a while. But about 24 years ago, I was introduced to human performance, and it was very interesting because at the time, I was already a study of human nature. I always wanted to learn how to improve relationships for our children, for our spouses, and, you know, just general relationships. And when I started reading the human performance material and realized that everything around us as workers, everything that surrounds us influences the way we behave, it really struck a chord with me. So I've been very passionate about human performance ever since. And for the past 24 years, I've been really focused on what that looks like. So I started a company 7 years ago to start consulting. It's called HOPE Consulting. And HOPE is an acronym for Human and Organizational Performance Enhancement. So that's what I've been doing. That's kind of how I got started. And things have been great.
How have you seen human performance change in 24 years? I think that's a good question. I'm really proud of that question, actually.
Well, I've seen a lot of different things. If we talk about the commercial nuclear industry, you know, we all started out as infants. You know, the maturity was very low for all of us. We were all just learning. So we took in everything. We soaked it up as a sponge. And quite frankly, I feel like we overwhelmed ourselves. We gave ourselves too many tools and techniques to think about and really kind of missed the behavioral points and the behavioral pictures of it. And so, you know, today, when I go out and work with a client, that's why I'm so willing to customize their training, because I do an assessment of where they are today, where their current performance is. Because of the lessons we learned previously, you don't want to overwhelm the organization. In an assessment, you can tell where they're stomping their toes, if you will, or where they're struggling, and you can approach it differently with more focus. Instead of overwhelming them with a dozen or 20 different tools and techniques to learn that are standardized out there, why not pick a handful of them that'll give them the biggest bang for the buck today? So we're one of the few that are willing to do that and take that kind of customized approach. That's one thing that I've seen that's kind of changed. The other thing is that, you know, growing up in the nuclear industry, we had lots of help. And so regulators and others that were assigned to help us could assess us and tell us at some point that we did not have an engaged workforce. That was a big thing for a while. You know, we did not have an engaged thinking workforce. And they said, you need to change that. But no one told us how. So one of the things I did and I made a point of doing was to figure out, what does that look like? How do you create a truly engaged workforce? And that's when I started out thinking about the observation and feedback methods, and I created coaching to enhance performance as a result. And in that process, you know, what we do to help that engagement is we go out and have an observation and then collect the workers together so that we can have a feedback session that is very collaborative and very much a learning experience. In fact, you know, reading your book and reading about learning teams, it's something similar. You pull a team of folks together and you're getting all their ideas. They're collaboratively working together. Well, when you observe work and then afterwards you're ready to give feedback, it's not just one way. You make it collaborative and learning. You get information from the observer and the observees, if you will. And we've been very successful with that.
Do you find that you fix the workers, or do you find that you fix the system in which the workers are working?
Both. Because what we do is we make a point of identifying where we or the workers or themselves, they get to do some self-evaluation on what they believe they could actually do better to improve their own performance. But at the same time, we're very conscious of what organizational weaknesses in the system that may be hampering them, and we make sure we talk about those as well. So we take a two-pronged approach when we do that.
If you had a ratio like of system changes to behavior changes, what would you think it would be? Is it mostly system changes or mostly behavior changes? I'd be really curious.
Oh, I think that's really dependent on the organization and really how mature they are in various things.
So
if they have a high maturity level in maybe Six Sigma or Lean, their processes may be very strong and their number of organizational weaknesses may be low, but others may not. So it's kind of hard to put ratios, I think, on that. But the consistency is that you need to look for both. You got to look for the behavioral so that we understand what we need to do to minimize errors and improve our performance. But you also have to be very conscientious of the system weaknesses.
So when you go in and do those assessments, which I think is a really cool, that's a cool advantage you guys have. What do those look like? Are they surveys, or is it more observational, or is it conversations or focus groups?
Yeah, it's more observational than anything, but there is a lot of interviews too. You know, we go out and observe what's going on, what's happening in the work or out on the floor, or, you know, in the field or wherever the work is. But we also ask lots of questions. So we do a lot of interviewing to understand what it is we've seen while we're there. So I would say it leans heavily on observations, because really, if you're looking to go in and help anyone with an initiative to improve performance, it really boils down to what kind of culture you see. And the only way you can get an idea of the culture is to go out and observe what kind of behaviors you see.
I actually think surveys kind of suck at a bunch of levels. Let me say it this way. It's more professional. I'm not a giant fan of the intervention of a survey. But I think observation gives you a good chance to sort of look at how work's really done. Do you see much misalignment between formalized processes and procedures and actual work done?
Well, absolutely. You know, workers have a tendency to get the job done. They have pride in what they do. They'll drive themselves to be efficient, and that may mean that they may drift some from what's formally there in front of them to get the job done. There may be system weaknesses that are causing them to want to have to work around or work with things that are kind of blocking their way. So yeah, there's definitely issues there.
So what would be an indicator if I were a safety guy, or I was running a system out there somewhere in industry, what would be indicators that would help me understand a good opportunity for, you know, like bringing Ray in and looking around? What do you look for that helps you understand there's potential there to really move that organization in a positive direction towards reliability?
Well, I'll tell you, if there is no engagement from first line supervisors, if there's not an effort for leads and supervisors to be out and watching work and giving feedback, that's certainly an indicator right there. Another indicator may be that people are driving past what a lot of people call error precursors. They're working with them and they're going beyond them. They see something that they don't understand, yet they push themselves forward. So they go beyond. They don't stop if they're uncertain or if they're unsure. If those are indicators that people are seeing at their organization, then we need to talk, because there is a way to help people understand when it is they need to stop. So a quick little story. About 15 years ago, someone came to me because we were talking about human performance tools and techniques, and he said, "Hey." He goes, "So how do I stop when uncertain if I don't know I'm uncertain?" And back then I thought to myself, hey, that's a great question. And I really didn't have an answer. But years ago, I was asked to go in and take a quick look at a cause evaluation. It was a large common cause evaluation that was being done. They pulled me into that war room, you know, that has those yellow stickies all over three of the four walls that are in there. They walked me down the timeline, and sure enough, I sensed there was something there, but I needed to see their data. So I pulled all their reports, and they had a bunch of them, and I went through all their reports, and what I found was that about 90% of the time, there was a very visible trigger staring them right in the face just before the undesirable event happened. So I pulled more operating experience, more reports from the industry, and I did some more analysis, and consistently came close to 90% of the time these visible triggers were there. So long as the evaluation was written well and it told a story, you could tell when these visible triggers were popping up, and that told me that people were driving themselves past those visible triggers. They weren't stopping for some reason. So as a result of that, I developed trigger training to help people understand the human nature that drives us to want to proceed in the face of uncertainty, and how to do a proper stop, how to make sure we stop, get the help we need before we proceed in the face of uncertainty. With those numbers being so high, there was a chance for improvement.
What do those triggers look like? Are they goal conflicts? Are they procedural conflicts? Are they behavioral indicators? What do you normally see?
It is a variety of things, you know, all lumped into those, you know, every visible trigger is some type of organizational weakness, but they're very visible. Some examples could be as simple as a label on a valve. You know, the entire system has a certain type of coded label. You do 50 tag outs on a valve system, and you're looking at these same type of labels each time, but then you go to the 51st one and the label itself is different. It's no longer a barcode. It's an old stamp aluminum plate, you know, like what we used to have back in the day. That is a very visible trigger that, hey, there's something different here.
That was a nice conversation. Yeah, wouldn't it? Good. I mean, cordial and nice and friendly and fun and interesting and I don't know. It meets all the tests. It seems good to me. I enjoyed it immensely. It's interesting. Ray is famous for his ability to coach in the field. He's really got that kind of worked out. I mean, he's excellent in that area. Probably like among the best in the world in that area. And it's interesting too because he's really busy and he does. Kind of the classic human performance program. I mean, it's a pretty classic program. It's pretty good. And it was fun. It'd be interesting to get Ray involved in kind of a new view safety discussion, kind of the more safety two stuff, because I always think that's human performance is kind of the bridge into that new thinking. And it's always a really interesting conversation, stunning and amazing and sometimes controversial and always fun. That's for sure. Fun's a good part of that. Absolutely. Things are great here, and all is well, and I'm getting ready to travel a bit, so I've got to get that all under control, you know, kind of a long trip. I'm, for some reason, going from Copenhagen to Auckland, New Zealand, because, you know, why not? It's just a plane ride, and they all kind of go places. So that'll be a lot of time with my compression socks on, my socks that squeeze my feet and my legs, so I don't have some kind of DVT episode and pass out in the aisle and they have to drag me out and I don't get $1 million, because I only want to do it if it's $1 million. The good news, and there's all sorts of good news, is the Berlin training is wide open for you if you're interested. So think about it. I don't know much about it right now as I record this, but we're learning more every single day. And so I'll just get smarter and smarter and smarter. But isn't that the way? That's the way you want it anyway. And I'm always looking for new podcast ideas as well. So if you have an idea or think about an idea that would make sense to you, give me a ring, drop me a note, drop me an email. As I say, I'm terribly easy to talk to, but I'm hard to contact. And some of that, I think, probably psychologically is on purpose, I would guess. If I had to heal myself and look at my systems, that would be part of it. But other than that, heck, life is grand. One more podcast down the tube and a great chance to talk with a friend. It's a really good chance to get Ray in front of you guys so you can hear what he has to say and see what you think. It's always good. I mean, this is always it's a good thing to do, and I'm glad we do it. It's a nice community we've built. Tell your friends, if you get a chance, and you almost always have a chance, do me a favor this week and invite somebody to listen to the podcast that doesn't listen and see if that makes a difference. It's good to get new people. The numbers are crazy, and it is the number one safety podcast in the world, but I think we can do more. I always kind of feel like we can do more. Big podcasts are coming. So other than that, I'll let you rock it. Have a good day today. Do something fun. I hope you get what you need. You know, that's important. Learn something new every single day. Have as much fun as you possibly can, and for goodness sakes, y'all, be safe.